Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
The center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this particular episode of the Four Center podcast feed is the Bad Batch Report. That was wonderful. This started out as longtime listeners know, if I'd say Clone Wars Report or Bad Batch Report, and then Ken would do some cool music, and it has now become just a fun audio sample of something from the episode.
That was a mistake. That's straight. I started choking. That was a mistake, kids. Don't try to be like the little bat spiders or whatever we got.
Oof. Yeah. You got to train your voice, you know, to do those kind of things. So I wanted to be clear. Was that Ruby or is that the Earlings?
It was the Earlings. Yeah. Okay. Ruby would just be munching on Mentel mix.
Which, you know, I'd be happy to hear that, too. Yes. But we'll save it for maybe later. Maybe next week. There'll also be a surprise Mentel mix munch.
I mean, Mentel mix is definitely a featured character in this show.
It absolutely is an honorary member of the Bad Batch, Mentel mix. So everybody listening probably already knows the person making the wonderful early noises is Ken Napsok. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and we are excited to dive into the 13th episode of season 1 of Bad Batch. It is called Infested, written by Amanda Rose Munoz, directed by Saul Ruiz. Once again, very consistent, around a 25-minute-ish episode. And Ken, we only have 3 episodes left. We are definitely going to get into big themes. We'll talk about overall reaction to this episode. But first, I just want to acknowledge the Ronto in the room. that this episode online is, of course, already spurring a little bit of the discussion that I think happens around a lot of the Star Wars animated series. It also happens around Mandalorian, of this tension between, what is called in the business serialized storytelling, where each episode elides into the next and is telling one complete story, or episodic, where you have a set characters who have different adventures week to week. And in general, I would say most Star Wars shows are serialized with episodic elements, so that they're mostly telling a big picture story, but a lot of that big picture story is told by just an adventure that a character has that week, that is in that episode, that episodic episode moves the serialized story forward eventually by having met new characters, having set up specific themes or points of tension for the character, and then they kind of don't pay off into the big serialized story until a little bit later. So that's kind of my opinion of what these shows are, and some of the terminology for it that isn't filler, serialized versus episodic. But this definitely did feel like an episode where the show is heading towards conflict with Crosshair, bounty hunters coming after them. Who will the Bad Batch decide to be? And this episode did feel like it kind of took a step back and had a more contained adventure. What did you feel about all that?
Yeah, I'm not going to be snarky to those that are determined to take down the show now, apparently online. I'm going to put folks on the positive just to say I felt this episode was misplaced in the track listing on the album. and that's at most. Otherwise, we got an episode that has the underworld full center. We got some great Star Wars horror. We got some great Star Wars heisting, an ode to Temple of Doom. Got a lot in here that really shows the Bad Batch making some decisions, big lessons about commitment and comments on family legacy and power. So it's got all the things we've loved in the show so far. It just, yeah, it's the show never promised that the pedal was going to the metal. And the last 4 episodes were Crosshair chasing the Bad Batch. We promised that to us. That's what happens. But I get it. Literally as we're recording, I've got a plane to catch. So last night I watched this. I was like, I'm so glad this isn't a deep episode that's going to have 19 pages of notes. It was this fun little adventure with some powerful lessons in it. Makes it easier for me today. But I get the conversation, Joseph. I understand. I knew right when it faded to black. I'm like, here it comes. Filler conversation, filler discourse. And it's not that. It's just maybe slightly, for me, misplaced.
Yeah, I can see the misplaced. I think, yeah, this is such an opportunity to really choose how you want to react to something, because I'm definitely in that ballpark. To put it in a really positive way, they have done such a good job of teasing up the stakes, building up the stakes of that Crosshair relationship. Will he get the chip out? Will it make a difference? The possibility of running into Boba Fett, and even if not Boba Fett, the reality of Omega being this wonderful character, this kind, intuitive, thoughtful person who has a bunch of bounty hunters who just want to take her for money. Like, those stakes are so high and so interesting that when I sit down, I'm like, come on, give me those. And then as soon as this episode started, I was like, oh, that's not what this episode is. And at that point, I have a choice. I can say I'm going to just trust that stuff I'm looking forward to is coming eventually, and have some patience and enjoy this for what it is. Or I can get mad and, want to time travel back to the, however very, very long ago where this was written.
Yeah, yeah.
And say, no, you have to understand that in July of 2021, when this would be broadcasting, all of, a lot of the fans will want this, and like time travel back and know that creators, like, no, the creators created what they created, and I'm going to try to embrace it for what it is and enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. A choice is a great way. And I think you and I carry that into everything we watch in Star Wars and always want to dive in to see what's there. You knew right away that, when I say right away, I mean, the episode starts and they're talking about a mission we didn't see. We're talking about Gundarks and adventures and all those things that clearly a little bit of time had passed between Ryloth and now, and that's where we're at.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also think a lot of times with these episodes that are more episodic, that people sometimes call filler, I think a lot of stuff is happening that people don't appreciate the payoff until later. I think that definitely happened, continued to happen with the Mandalorian. And I think that there's a lot at work in here. I think that relationships that Omega is developing with Durand might really pay off later. Certainly building the relationship with Sid, this is a new page on that relationship for everybody. This is putting a real focus on the Bad Batch having a more complete understanding of the criminal underworld. There's a bunch of stuff in here that could really, really pay off. You know, this is not necessarily just a one-off adventure.
Yeah. If in the final episode, they're saved by Roland Durand, you're going to point to this one. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but that's kind of what you're talking about. Even Leia delivering the Hammerhead Corvettes to the rebels, right? To a rebel cell in Star Wars Rebels, so an episode that was decried as filler to the point where later on after Rogue One, the creators actually said, filler, huh? Huh? That what you think? And I don't mean to turn it into like this war or this battle, but yeah, it's the truth. It's the truth. We always preach, have a little patience.
Yeah, yeah. Now, of course, anybody is free to react to the episode in any way they like. But ultimately, even if people were frustrated by this episode because they felt like quote unquote filler to them, I honestly think that is a bit of a compliment because it means we're so excited to see all these other storytelling threads that they've built up. So you've shared a little bit of your overall reaction. Anything else from an overall reaction to this episode?
Yeah, no, I just this episode really found the Batch making big choices to me and making enemies and perhaps allies, as I said, in the underworld and you know, running up against the Pikes and, like you said, learning the full scope of that and all those kind of things. It was interesting, particularly on a second viewing with a cup of coffee and a bowl of oatmeal as opposed to midnight and kind of thinking, oh, wow, I thought Crosshair and we are going to rev the engines and everything. And some great banter. And I enjoy some banter, and I'm always going to come here for some Sid banter.
Yeah, yeah. There was a bunch of stuff that I liked about it kind of overall. Just the quality Sid time, you know? If this was the kind of show that had a next time on Bad Batch and we kind of were going into it knowing, ooh, it's a Sid special. Like, I think a lot of people would have been great. We get to spend quality time with Sid, which I really appreciated about this episode. I also just really liked the overall creepy, ominous tone. It gets set right at the beginning. There's ominous music just as the Marauder lands, you know? Mm-hmm. And there's so much about this episode that is about sort of the dark forces lurking in the depths that are truly beyond the Bad Batch's control. They can only really respond to them. And dive into that a little bit more when we talk about big themes. So I just really like that mood and what that did for the era and what a contrast that was to kind of the other side of it, of Omega always being this little beacon of light and hope and connection. So a lot of just kind of nice thematic and visual poetry going on. I also very much enjoyed that Sid's plan was the plot of the James Bond novel and film Casino Royale.
Yes.
Which is basically take the lower level, take the money away from the lower level player, and then the scarier people will kill him. Great.
Having just completed that in a recent rewatch, you're so right. You need the chief around here.
There, it would have been way too real world if Sid had been like, I was watching this Hollow,
yeah,
with Craigle Dan, and he played Bondle James, and yeah. Anyway, the other overall thing that I wanted to add is that Gundark's quip at the top was really fun, because it's got me really thinking about how intentional it is to really clearly communicate their space between these missions. And at this point, when anybody's working in any sort of IP universe, but in particular Star Wars, of really reminding yourself, like, these characters are fun. And, you know, we might want just like some IDW adventure comics where it can be this group of people having an adventure. Let's create some canon space for it.
Mm, Mm. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Dig back in. And plus that line, you know, was interesting to me, just like Sid withholding information from them a little bit on some of the missions. It was a good start. Yeah, but I like I like what you're saying of Bad Batch versus the Gundarks coming now to IDW Star Wars Adventure.
Yeah, it's a little bit of room to breathe. Last overall thing for me, I think just with the amount that the show is developing and putting chess pieces into place, the other thing that I got out of this episode, which was really positive, is same as you, I watched it at midnight and I woke up this morning to watch it again. And I just had an overwhelming feeling of there is going to be a season two.
Yeah.
And it was a good thing because I feel like chess pieces are being put into place of the larger criminal underworld, you know, as well as the, you know, ongoing conflict with Crosshair and the Empire and bounty hunters. It just really made me feel like this is being written more like a team that knows they have a second season.
Yeah, a little time, a little room. Yeah.
I'm hopeful for that. All right. With that, let's dive into the big ideas, the big themes. What did you feel like was really at stake in this episode?
Oh, no self-help books, like I said last week. But I do, there was this idea, I'm calling it the Qui-Gon Jinn, there's always a bigger fish lesson here. The vicious cycle of power. That's at play here. You mentioned it with the Casino Royale plot, but also in these power grabs, which we see on a small local level, Roland Durand grabbing this one there, and then it comes back to bite him. And then it's just once you're in this kind of cycle, you're kind of useless if you aren't delivering. They get you, you get them, and then the pikes get y'all, which just seems to be at the end of the game. And this idea of you take what you want and how that idea, I'll talk a little bit later how I think some of this connects to the overall Star Wars perspective. But I love to just keep seeing that on display and having a small moment. There's a little bit of a family legacy kind of vibe and theme going on with Roland talking about his mother, Issa Duran, and if she saw me now, which did not seem positive, did not seem like a good upbringing. And it all kind of assists to me this vicious cycle of grabbing power.
I really like that. There's always a bigger pike. the vicious cycle of violence and bad family.
Yeah,
those are some big Star Wars themes. I'm right there with you. I think for me, the way I thought about some of these elements that you're talking about is just this idea of sort of dark, overwhelming forces. You know, this episode has multiple things that we kind of learn explicitly, like Bad Batch can't shoot their way out of. They can shoot at it. And they do, and it's their first instinct, but it is not going to solve their problem, right? This big picture, as you're saying, that the pikes are too large and powerful to fight, and how clear Sid is on that of like,
yeah,
you can shoot these guys in this room, but then you're not even going to die. They are going to capture you, and you and everyone you love will be in horrible pain. Like, yeah, this is bigger than you can control. And then the Urlings, you know, always great to just, for me to be reminded that this is a galaxy where there are strange monsters lurking in all depths. Yeah. So I like the Urlings in general, but what a just an image of an overwhelming force rising up from the darkness. And if you disturb it, you are going to be overwhelmed and you can't shoot your way out of it. It is overwhelming. And then Sid even makes this like much more explicit on what's actually functionally going on in the episode is, hey, you need to use subterfuge, stealth, bargaining, a couple of Sid's direct lines, start climbing, tough guys, which is a funny line, but also like, yeah, you know, it's like, yeah, you can't punch this problem. We got to, you know, take it down into the lurking in the mines. And then I like it when she says, this is a stealth mission. You boys are good at that, right? Which is just a great tension of the Bad Batch, and I think a great tension of their transition, because, you know, when we got to see them in the Clone Wars episodes, they were soldiers who used a little bit of stealth, but then they got to just rush in and loudly, proudly blow the crap out of everything, right?
Yeah.
And so many missions they're encountering now, it kind of ends up falling into that. But this is when we're like, you can't do that. You're not going to be able to shoot your way out. This is like one of those video games where stealth isn't an option on this mission. You have to do stealth or game over.
Well, it's funny because a lot of the mining car stuff reminded me of a video game where you're like moving the joystick, that little controller on your PS4, like your clockwise motion, circular. I can't get the rhythm down, and therefore I'm not pumping the mining car in the right way. I love too, just on if you want to even look at it on a surface level, I love just seeing the Bad Batch being forced to stretch, which we've seen a few times. You've probably seen this entire season is about that. Hey, this is what you were, this is what you are capable of, but this is not necessarily how you're going to solve every problem. To see it on display, to see it on an intimate level is in the overall picture, part of the fun I'm having watching the Bad Batch.
Yeah. And for me, it is. It's about pushing them out of their comfort zone. And it is about, you know, the literal story of, look, there are forces in the natural world and forces in the criminal underworld that are too big for you to just handle by yourself. So that's what's literally going on in the episode. But it's also kind of just a metaphor for all the storytelling about this era under the Empire of, you know, you have to use, you know, bargaining, planning, subterfuge, stealth, you know, making partnerships, because you can't just go running at them. Blasters blazing, they're too big. Like that. Mm-hmm. What are other ideas from you?
Well, based on the quote, we just can't walk away from Omega. We have to find her and help her. I love the idea of commitment, loyalty to those that deserve it. And then if we're talking about the vicious cycle of power, I'll talk about the circle of loyalty. I got the kid into this mess, I'll get her out, says Sid. Even Roland and Omega have a little bit of a connection, and Omega sees something and says, it doesn't even know why. I don't know why. Ruby likes him. Maybe he's not all bad, which I think does connect to the bigger ideas of redemption in Star Wars, even though on a smaller level in this episode, for sure. But I looked at Roland again, whether we see him again or not, I don't know. But you remember when you first met Hondo, he's not as maybe scary as Hondo was. You know, go back to the beginning. Hondo was a threat. But Hondo developed into a character that was always around. I still feel Roland could be that, because we got a little bit of his history. Issa Dran, his mother, is someone to reckon with. And either that's just great, you know, little backfill of information on his life, or something that we might learn more about later. I don't know. But if something does come out of the character of Roland Duran, I'll go back to this idea, this theme of commitment, not walking away, and being loyal again to those who maybe deserve it.
Yeah, no, I love the cycle spin you're putting on this. It makes a ton of sense. And this episode does really make a little circle with Omega and Sid's connection to one another. Yeah, I just thought it was this great contrast that a lot of it was these images of these dark forces that are overwhelmingly powerful. But then in contrast, we get all these moments of empathy and attachment. The big ones that you're talking about, of Omega insisting on helping Sid, of, well, we have to find her and help her. And Sid being determined at the end to save Omega, as you said, I got the kid into this mess and I'll get her out. But it keeps reflecting in different ways. Like, Sid's plan hinges on her knowledge that Roland has a connection to Ruby. And we get that very cute little scene where Ruby's got that very accurate to an animal, cute little hustle sniff.
Yeah.
To eat the Mantel mix. But that's all about, you know, empathy and attachment. In a darker way, the Pikes kind of consistently recognize empathy and attachment as a weakness, and they use it as a threat, right? They threaten not just Roland, but like your entire family. And they know right away to go for Omega when they're confronting the Bad Batch and saying the child stays here. So they're really pushing on that nerve of empathy and attachment. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, as you're saying as well, that great moment of Omega bonding with Roland Durand, but in particular that it's all because of Ruby. It's because Roland has, and we get to see it even when Omega isn't around, that Roland has this legitimate connection, that he is not somebody who has had all empathy or love driven from him. He's somebody who's trying to claim he has no empathy mm-hmm. or love, you know. And I love it when Roland says to Omega, oh, Ruby doesn't take a liking to many people, which, to your point, is a nice little cycle. Then it comes back at the end when Hunter asks, you know, why are you sticking up for him? He's like, well, you know, Ruby likes him. He can't be all bad. So you've really got Ruby as this like little mm-hmm. this little symbol of empathy and attachment, and the possibility of having humanity within these really dark times and in dark eras, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and a dog shall lead them, I guess. Ruby, the space turtle lizard dog. I don't know.
lizard turtle dog. Yeah, I think that sounds great. Yeah. And I think in terms of the whole kind of episodic discussion, you know, I thought it was interesting to go back and look at that introduction of Ruby, because she was stolen by the Bad Batch in an adventure we didn't quite see for Sid, and Sid was hired, we learn in this episode, by Roland, because Roland wanted this pet for some reason. But there's that line in that episode, it's the beginning of Battle Scars, the episode where Rex shows up, so I think Rex takes our focus, where, you know, Omega is concerned about Ruby, has already immediately made a bond with Ruby, and like, what's happening to her? And Sid has that kind of funny but cruel line, like, I don't know, you might want a pet, might want to make a stew.
Yeah.
So even there's even that little bit of connection where we've already met Ruby, and Ruby has been a symbol for Omega of care and concern about everyone she meets. And Sid has tried to pretend to be like, I don't care, everything's money.
Right.
You know, and that contrast to Ruby is the hinge on which a lot of this works as the symbol of empathy and connection. And this is an episode that really opens Sid up. You know, we've seen before that she cares about Omega, but this was I'm going to use your cycle thing. There was a great cycle of Sid and the rest of the Bad Batch, not Omega, but you know, we get the thing at the beginning where she says, don't forget how good I've been at keeping secrets. And Tech's like, oh, you're threatening us. And it's a funny line, but like, it really is her remembering, like, I have you under my thumb, so you're going to do what I want. But by the end, she says, come on, boys, first round's on me. And they run like kids who are going to get ice cream. Like, that's a big shift in the dynamic between Sid and the rest of the Bad Batch, to have that sense of family and connection and empathy and attachment, you know?
Yeah, well, first of all, that's going to be me this weekend in Seattle when Ellis screams that. So let's go to the bar. I really felt at the end of the episode, I've always already been a fan of Sid from a certain point of view. We don't know maybe where the character will land or haven't known. And, you know, you and I have said before, Rhea Perlman, we're very excited to have Carla from Cheers in Star Wars. So it's been fun. But this is the episode I felt I got to see her, get to see a little bit more. And where the episode ends, you're so right. I almost am like, is she now part of the team? Does she fly around? Is she ready to go? Because also, she's really good at action. She knows what to do. She got that cane, but she's moving like crazy.
Oh, yeah. And she's strong, right? She's a Trandoshan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think it really developed her character well. And I like that we even learned that Bolo and Ketch are a little bit more devoted to Sid than we realized, right? You know, not just barflies, they're her agents.
I need a Ketch and Bolo spinoff for sure now. It's been simmering all season long, but yeah, give it to
me. Come on. Just totally episodic adventures of Bolo and Ketch. Bolo and Ketch screw it up. I think that's what it should be called.
Yeah.
Every episode they can screw something up.
Like a new Saturday morning cartoon vibe. Star Wars.
Any other thoughts on this individual episode before we talk about how it's reflected in larger Star Wars ideas?
No. I think you pulled that love. I mentioned the family legacy. It wasn't a super spotlighty display, but I was intrigued by Roland talking about the bonds of family, and sometimes those are heavy, and how it affected him.
No, I'm right there with you. I think that little conversation popped because of just sort of the relationship between Omega and Roland and kind of how it played out in the end of this specific episode. But yeah, that's part of what made it feel like this was really laying groundwork for introducing, you know, another family, another criminal element, definitely generational, of Roland really feeling like, I am somebody who has failed. I was trying to prove myself to my mother, trying to prove myself to the galaxy as a badass, and I failed. Mm-hmm. And I love that he specifically says the philosophy of, you know, you take what you want, that's the Durand way, you know.
Yeah.
And that's a thing that really connects the philosophy of Star Wars, of the light side is about empathy and connection and mercy.
Yeah.
And so many of the bad guys have the philosophy of people who say that they're out to help each other are just lying. We know the truth is everybody is out for themselves. So the smarter thing to do is just be out for yourself, right? I mean, that's a Sith philosophy. That's a Nile philosophy. Yeah. And that was really interesting to hear that presented in this generational way of like, I'm trying to live up to my family tradition of taking what you want.
Yeah.
And I thought it had great contrast in terms of being this little moment of generational thematics of Omega at the end with Hunter, right?
Yeah.
because Hunter's been really trying hard to protect her, to raise her. But there's these moments of really learning from her. And the way Hunter asked, why did you stick up for him after what he did? It was almost like Hunter was really like, I am trying to learn.
Yeah.
And Omega, you know, says that, I don't know, Ruby likes him. Maybe he's not all bad. And he kind of thinks about it. And for me, it was this great little inversion of Roland just desperately trying to follow in his mother Ice's footsteps. And then we got this contrast where Hunter is trying to learn from the younger generation because they know something he doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah. And perplexed by it. Right. But not opposed to it. So there's that theme of change that's run through the entire season and generational change. I really like they're tying it to the circle aspect there. We keep saying it, and a child shall lead them. Omega's just kind of got the ability to get things down to the core. There's even some moments, some of the conversation that you described as popping. I think a pop for a lot of reasons, because great horror, this heist film, and then all these things in the middle of it, it's this quiet one-on-one conversation. Well, two-on-one if you count Ruby in there as well, right? But,
exactly.
Even with Roland, Omega kind of just was able to boil it to the core issue.
Yeah, and she was still pissed at him, but like even within that, she was like, well, I'm listening and learning, you know, being observant. Only other big Star Wars theme for me is just really continuing to show us this era, you know, the significance of the Pikes. They're always in power, but this question of like how much more power are they going to have under the Empire, you know, and just seeing the Pikes did get me excited for, you know, along the line, is there some Dryden Vos action? Maul, yeah. Jabba, you know?
Oh, yeah. You got me excited to maybe rewatch Solo.
Yeah, exactly. Anything else for you?
In terms of the larger story here? Yeah. I mean, you were touching on, but I had written this down and it seems almost cheesy. Seems almost cheesy, but the dark side manifests itself in so many ways in these stories and in Star Wars. And we literally have it going on here. You talked about the those creatures. What are they? Gleans?
Erlings.
I gotta click on the CC, the closed caption at some point in my life.
I tell you, man, it's midnight is let it wash over me, and the morning is all closed captions all the time.
Literally every episode, I'm like, gosh, do the closed captions. I don't. But it's literally the dark side taking them over. Like I said, you disturb it and you touch it and you mess with it and it's gonna take you over. And so this episode had the dark side, and then literally the light side will get you through. The idea of light being a savior, a light being a guide, a light being a weapon of defense and a weapon of survival, and how on one side you get support, loyalty, commitment, help, safety, results, good results. The other side is double crossing, lack of connection, support, prices to pay, pain, suffering. I know which side I'd like to lean to. I don't know about you.
Yeah, no, I am on the side of Tex Light Bomb for sure. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's great that you're pulling it out. We've talked about it before. Like, you know, the dark side and the light side aren't unique to Jedi. You don't need lightsabers or, you know, lightning from your fingers, from your danger fingers to make those choices. And this is an episode that really highlights that. And I think it is very, very intentional, particularly if you listen to the music. Like I said, at the beginning, when they're just landing, coming back to Ord Mantell, those are chords of doom. But then in contrast, when they're getting the ship over that chasm to retrieve the spice and save Omega, the music is much more like brighter and proactive and hopeful. And those themes you're talking about are like there in the music.
Yeah, Chords of Doom was a great Yes album. But the music is always, it's so good. It's almost similar to Mandalorian. It's so good, you almost forget to talk about it because it's just such part of it. Part of the story, but it really made all things aside about this episode and filler misplaced. That discourse can go someplace else. Just the adventure itself was such great Star Wars, like I said, horror and a heist film and all those things. We're talking about the individual moments after the break, but the music really worked for that and underscored what we were experiencing without a doubt.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess my last thought on the episodic serialized filler discussion is I really do think it makes a big difference of how you choose to perceive it. Because if you sit down and just say, I really like these characters, I like the Bad Batch, I like Sid, I want to see him have an adventure this week. Mm-hmm. You get to spend some time with him. You get to see some cool things in a cool, weird space fantasy adventure.
Yeah. Oops. Yeah. That. Yeah. I can't wait to talk about the sequence. There's that mining car sequence is one of my favorites.
There was some great stuff there. So let's take a quick break, and then we will get into all of those great moments in just a moment.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at UH1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, Four Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, Four Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
And we are back to continue our discussion of Bad Batch Episode 13, Infested. I thought this episode was infested with many great action moments, comedy moments, some fun canon stuff, so let's get into the infestation. Ken, did you have some favorite action moments?
I have some favorite infestations. Yes, I had. So yeah, what I'm calling the Temple of Doom chase sequence, it was familiar enough to where I call that. I'm not saying it's a direct one-for-one ode, but just everything about it. But before that, what sets a lot of that up is the the record dropping the flashlight sequence. That is so good. He drops it. It, you know, reminded me of, you know, you fool if it took. Gandalf's going to yell at him. But the screams down below, the tension, the horror building up. I mean, that pays off with the chase sequence. But I think a lot of that is owed to that moment.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I loved it. Looked great. Visually, it sounded great. And I love the design of just like hearing that scream from below the earth of did we set them off? And like, we didn't this time, but then you've also just got that great tension for the rest of the episode. Like, but you know, that's a Chekhov's hive that's going off, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a neat little trick and it was working. And you know, our guy Wrecker, it just worked.
And you might have this in your comedy moments, but the delivery on it was an accident
there, but yes. Yeah.
great stuff. Yeah. So that sets it up. So then, I imagine that you're just into the whole Temple of Doom vibe. I think it's great, too. You know, Temple of Doom, we know it as Temple of Doom. Temple of Doom is, you know, borrowing from lots of other, you know, cart chases and, you know, train rail chases and that kind of thing. It's got this great vibe to it. But I thought there were a lot of, like, great specific moments of seeing our heroes choose to do cool specific things, too. Did you enjoy some of those?
Yeah, from putting on the brakes. Setting when Hunter does the goes in, kicks everyone out, sets the cart in reverse, and leaps out as it goes away. Come on, that was just cool. It was it was John Wick like to me or something like that. I love that.
Yeah, absolutely. That whole sequence, the cleverness of it, and the using the tools around him, so resourceful. But that initial just slam on the brakes and the guards run into them and go flying out. You know how much I love it when people scream and fall from a high place. That is just that space fantasy action adventure to me, and I just love that.
One day we'll find out the reasons why, but we don't need to ask why. We just need to enjoy it with you now.
Yeah, yeah. I also like then once the Earlings actually exploded and it was this huge, overwhelming you know, a flying mound of them. I like that when they just took one of the mining cars with the guards in it. It was like, we're just going to drag this down to the depths. Don't worry about it.
Oh, it was kind of scary, man. It's like, damn, this is, you know, we got something to reckon with here. And were the Earlings, were they hungry or just pissed? I don't know. Both? Column A, column B? Because they were just like, get out of here.
Yeah, was it like what you fantasize you could do with a car that where their alarm won't go off? Like, you know, if you could just swarm out of your building with everyone who lives in your apartment building and swarm down on a Prius and throw it? Yeah. Was it like that? It's making too much noise? Or was it like, ooh, tasty, tasty. I'm going to eat these guards.
Yeah, because they I mean, I watched this I did a little rewind. They take it apart, you know, not like piece by piece, but like they take the cage out. They take the guys out. They're just like, we're not going to eat this or destroy it or kill you. Just get at it. Done with this.
Yes, you have interrupted our nap. Yeah. What were some other moments for you?
At the end of the entire sequence, I really enjoyed the sealing of the door. Sealing of doors. There's an end of an action sequence trope, right? We've seen that a lot. And I love just the energy of just the green slime as one almost gets through. I thought that was a fun evocative ending to that wonderful horror sequence.
Yeah, no, it's definitely horrible, and it continues this great Star Wars physics that even large bugs are like bugs that you sometimes slap in real life, that they just sploosh. It reminded me very much of the Luke Skywalker level in Battlefront 2, which has some great philosophy, and then just tons and tons of bug murder.
Yes.
And they just explode, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I really like that door closing. Yes. And the final sploosh.
The final sploosh indeed. Yeah. You know, just one of my favorite ones is the end of Game of Thrones season 4 when the reanimated skeletons are chasing them and they go into the cave under the trees and then just the bones splatter everywhere as they get to safety. It reminded me of that.
Yeah, yeah, great stuff. This was kind of an action moment. I like it when the Pike said the child stays here, and the entire Bad Batch whip out their blasters all at once. You know, it was so great. It was just what a great visualization of their bond.
Yeah, you and I wrote down the same boat, just pulling the blasters and pikes, just without hesitation, not knowing. Yeah, they learn a little bit later what maybe they're up against, but they didn't care. And that's what I want. I want them not to care in those moments.
And it's also just a great, like, if you're going to have, you know, what we sometimes call like a playground or a bar debate, depending on your age, of like, who's the fastest draw amongst the Bad Batch? Like, well, we just have video evidence.
There you go. Who won? I didn't see. Did you focus on that?
I think Hunter wins. I believe Tech loses by a significant amount, which is okay because he's a winner in many other ways.
Oh, are we doing this?
But that's the last big one for me. Tech's light bomb was so great. I think the show does a good job in general of following up on the specific abilities of the different characters. I think sometimes it is, used for humor. Sometimes their differences are used to really just show characters who have this great bond and are this family, but also just perceive the world differently. And other times for this, it's just like really the action adventure skill set. Like they all kind of assume that Tech is probably doing something. Like, Tech, you working? I'm like, yep, I'm working on something that will resolve this problem that we absolutely know is going to come.
Yeah.
Not going to finish this before nightfall. And, the symbolism of it is not subtle, but it's powerful. You know, in that actual just visualization of that light bomb going off and then all of those Earlings just kind of skittering and flying out into the night. It was like cathartic, right? It's like, oh man, I need some light bombs for different parts of my life. It might be one of my favorite shots in the show. It looks beautiful and it just feels cathartic to me.
Yeah, I mean, they need to mass produce those there for future use. Tech's light side bomb. Incoming indeed.
Exactly. So that's it for me. Any other action moments you wanted to highlight?
No, I mean, there was a lot of great action in the episode, but that sequence was great, man. Just the great use of the mining carts, the bad guys just firing up the engines and you know what that's going to do. I thought it was really, really well done.
Yeah, tons of fun. And speaking of fun, let's get into any favorite moments of comedy, whimsy, or weirdness. I thought there were a lot of great moments in this episode. What did you gravitate toward?
I love this Tech line. I'm sure it's on your list as well. But given his tone, it's a plausible assumption that Sid was either forced out or taken out. Got it, Tech.
Yes, he was offering those different interpretations of the word out. And it was almost as close as he gets to, like, I know some lingo.
Yeah.
Sometimes in gangster circles, out can mean murder.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, that was a great one. I got a lot of Tech in, I didn't write them all down, but, you know, this was just a tribute to Wrecker screaming, moaning, all sorts of stuff. But I really liked early on, it is not the first time she has left out key details, Tech says, about Sid. But there has been this ongoing thread about Tech sometimes not telling people the things that they need to know because he thinks it's obvious.
Mm-hmm.
And then also really obsessing one on when other people leave out details. This great ongoing kind of joke of hypocrisy that he's not aware of.
Yeah, that's funny. That's not. Yeah, love that. A lot of little Sid lines for me too. Just start climbing, tough guys. I could just do a sound drop parade of Sid goggles, muscles,
tiny,
tiny. Yeah. Oh yeah, that's right, tiny with Omega.
Yeah. I highlighted this Sid line before because of the threat, but I thought it was great comedy of don't forget how good I've been at keeping secrets. And Tech says, I believe she's threatening us. You're quick.
Yes.
And that's one of those ones like, you know, you're quick is a fine line, but it's one where a person like Rhea Perlman, who has been delivering snark. With aplomb for decades, that is a performance-driven line to me. You're quick. It's so funny.
Her and Tex do remind me of Carla and Frasier at times.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's so great. Other moments for you?
Bola, okay, new plan, and then it just bolts. I want them in a sitcom, man. Catching Bola.
Yeah, I was really entertained on just the establishing shot of not only is Sid kind of doubled around and is hiding on the Marauder, but Bolo and Kench have come along and they're playing cards on Gonki, like Gonki's just a table.
Yeah. Gonky's probably happy with this purpose.
Yeah. You know, Gonky just wants to be involved for sure. The through line of Wrecker's fear of heights without calling it out and just kind of trusting that the audience has followed along. And he's got a lot of yelling. He's got a lot of muttering and panting. There's that at the end when Sid's kind of teasing him, is that bad? It wasn't that bad, right? And he's like, no, I'm okay.
Yeah. I wrote that one too. Yeah. Sea muscle wasn't bad. It just was very well acted. It's like I said, a runner. It's a great joke, but just it's very real every time it happens. It's just, oh, you gotta be kidding me. Like all those kind of things. It hasn't gotten old for me yet. I just really do love Wrecker.
Yeah, and it was really a highlight of delivery this week. I also wrote down Wrecker screaming on the comms, get us out of here.
Yeah.
It is true panic, just amazing delivery. I also like that moment. It was jokey, but it really established the truth of Roland's connection to Ruby and kind of his conflicted nature that he's trying to be this badass, but he's got these softer sides to him. When he's found Ruby, got her away from Bolo and Ketch, and he's like holding her up and kind of making kissy faces. And Roland says to Ruby, don't worry, we'll catch those two and kill them. Yes, we will. It's like a great, funny contrast, but it's also just like showing us the truth of the contrast of this character.
Yeah, absolutely.
I got just a couple more, but I want to see if you have any more.
No, I think I captured all the banter I loved. Sid on full display here.
Yeah. Last one for me. This is a very tech heavy episode. I really love Tech going full Wikipedia. We got to see his little data pad where he's looking up the name of the creatures. The tarot creatures we encountered in the cabin are Earlings. And it just was full Wikipedia.
And as he says it, we go into our own Wikipedia portals.
Yeah, I'm fully expecting to see little notes that this was edited by Tech on Wikipedia in the real world. All right, well, let's get into then moments of canon, lore, connections to other stories. I thought there was some interesting stuff here. Of course, right at the top, she failed to mention the drop zone would be swarming with Gundarks. Yeah. How do you feel about this? This is kind of a go-to if somebody wants to mention something unpleasant that has happened. It's often with Gundarks.
I think it's a great tradition. Yeah, a nest of Gundarks. Absolutely. I think that's really fun.
Yeah. And like I said, I just really like that line because at first it's like, yeah, Gundarks. Yeah, this really has that connection to, you know, pulled you out of that nest of Gundarks, Master, Attack of the Clones conversation. But it really did make me feel like, yeah, this is smart to really give some room to we can tell these adventures.
Yeah.
One of the big canon things there was, of course, you know, that whole Pike Syndicate, which we have seen in many places, Clone Wars and Solo in particular, made me really feel like, hey, somebody call Quaid Tolsite from Solo. But it also really was, I think, for me, another, we got to see the Zygerians who are in the criminal underworld, but from this very specific, you know, our culture is built on, you know, capturing sentient beings and enslaving them. But the Pikes are like, no, spice, drugs. That's our whole thing. Sure. And this picture of is this a good time for them? Because, you know, no Jedi getting in their business and no Republic laws. The Empire's going to be lax. You know, how did you feel about seeing them?
For whatever reason, I love seeing the Pikes. I don't know. I wrote Pikes and Spice too, which sounds like a great drink you can get at the first Starbucks in Seattle, which I'll probably try tomorrow morning. Yeah, I just have something about it. They're sort of so formidable. They incite a lot of fear in people, and I just so therefore knowing they're around, knowing this is you know what we see in Solo, what we hear other places. There's something about it I just like. I'm fascinated with the design. You know, this is kind of with a little bit more of the maskless version. So I love imagining the little spit valve drain thing that Quaid Tolsite has on that. A lot of things to think about. But yeah, they bring a sense of danger, and they really connect the story to the underworld, and I have fun with that.
Yeah, and direct connections to season 7 of Clone Wars with Trace and Rafa and Ahsoka really dealing with them and questioning whether they're a group of people to be dealt with at all. interacted with at all. I also just think they look and sound cool, right? I mean, you're talking about the look, but the sound, you know, I was really appreciating again this morning, just like the delivery and that, just that, that creepy, spooky with the effect of, it does make you feel like, oh, but they're just a couple of them and they don't even seem to be that heavily armed, but they command such fear is a really cool thing.
Yeah, this is, I don't know why I've made a lot of references to Ocean's Eleven movies recently, but like, you know, Terry Benedict, Andy Garcia playing him, where it's like, is he a threat? Yeah, because everyone's like, yeah, he'll go after your family, he'll go after your livelihood, he'll bankrupt your brother-in-law's car dealership. Like, the Pikes have that kind of weird, and here we are in a heist picture at a criminal underworld Star Wars story. They have that kind of energy of like, because I was thinking, just do it, shoot him, go on the run. Like, what do you think? But the fact that Sid's like, no, you can't.
Yeah.
Kind of oddly intriguing.
Yeah, that power when she puts her claw arm on Hunter's gun hand is just like, let me handle this. Don't do this. It's really powerful. Ruby, we talked a little bit that she is featured in that Battle Scars episode and that Sid was hired by Roland. So that was a little bit of a canon connection within the Bad Batch. See, these details all start to come back pretty quickly. Did you remember that, or did you... When you first saw Ruby, were you like, oh, yeah, of course? Or did you have to jog your memory?
It was a oh, yeah, of course. Why is that striking a chord type of looking it up type of thing? So I think it's great that you pointed out and really refreshed all of our minds. And again, yeah, I'm not going on dying on some Roland hill of connections to Roland. We might never see him again. I don't know. But I just that's not throwaway to me. That you heard him mention, you got Ruby, there's this connection. Ruby softens Roland for us, a little bit of a save the cat vibe if you're putting together characters. There's all things too that if you start, again, not unlike Hondo, had some comedy, made you laugh while he was threatening you early on, and then he turns into something a little else, more of an ally and crazy Uncle Hondo. I don't know if Roland becomes that, a wisecracking anti-hero, but it's not throwaway to me.
No, it's not throwaway. And I think the reason that I'm kind of fascinated with that Ruby canon is Ruby felt like just a fun detail to show Omega's humanity and to show this kind of cruel world where everything is about money. Like, who knows? I know you, I think Wrecker even has the, like, I can't believe you named that thing, you know?
Yes.
So there's a lot in that first episode with Ruby where she just seems like it's just a little plot point to signify things about Omega's character, and then maybe she's going to be a stew, who cares, deal with it. And then Rex comes and you just think like, oh, that was just a Ruby's just a little thing to show us Omega. But then here she comes back, and you know, the part of the Star Wars story that everyone is important, that this character of this pet can come back and have a little bit more meaning than it seemed like she was going to in her first appearance. And I think that is really true of Roland.
I think so. Ruby wasn't filler then. She's not filler now.
Here's what I wrote down for Roland in canon. Roland is new, but most importantly for me, Roland is not Visago from Rebels.
Yeah.
Because I had that like, you know, I've watched Rebels. I've enjoyed Rebels. I don't personally know Rebels in as much detail, but as soon as I saw that Devoronian, I was like, there's that Devoronian in Rebels. Is that, I don't remember his name off the top of my head. Is that it? And then, you know, when they push him down, I was like, oh, they're cutting off his horn, because I remember that. And then he's like, I don't think that's the same guy. And then I looked it up and like, not the same guy at all. Opposite horns broken. But that is Visago's whole thing is, you know, the broken horn. And I believe that's what his group is named. On Lothal.
Right.
So I was just kind of intrigued by that of like, I don't think there's a connection other than there's a similarity of like, I guess Devoronians, it's hard out there for their horns. How did you feel about that?
Yeah. I thought it was like, is this just what people do to punish them? Is this just a problem throughout the galaxy? I had the moment too. I'm perhaps a little more familiar with Rebels than you are, but even that, Visago's got a Russian accent, if I believe, something like that. But I had that moment too of this means something, even if it wasn't a direct connection. So I'm with you on that. And the Devoronians are, I'd love to see Roland go good So we have spend some quality time with a nice Deveronian down the line.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I think so. And yeah, I think the Deveronian who appears in Mandalorian also has some horn injury, right? Din shuts the door on his horns.
Careful them horns, kids.
So I hope the next Deveronian we see is just like, nobody is touching my horns.
That's your horns.
Yeah. But then just for big canon talk, I really do feel like the amount of time spent setting up Roland Rand and the mother Isa, like, I don't think like, and it's going to be important to the sequel trilogy down the line. Like, no, I think it just feels like this is world building for this era and these characters. And this is another possible enemy, ally, frenemy. For the Bad Batch to encounter again, maybe in this season, maybe in another.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Roland going up against that family legacy and approaching it from a different direction could be possible.
Yeah. Yeah. That's about it for me for canon. Anything else for you?
No. I'd say it was a canon light episode. It was its own thing. Set up some future canon for itself.
Yeah. Was there anything then in this episode that you disliked or questioned?
Again, overall, I get the conversation up top. I'm saying misplaced in the sense of, Oasis releases a great album in 94 with What's the Story of Morning Glory. You got track 8, Cast No Shadow. Track 9 is She's Electric. And you're like, what's this doing here? It's a fun little jingly jangly song, but it's not what I've been listening to here. I get it. All right. I get it. I'll say it's a little misplaced in terms of the running order, but I also think it was right where they wanted it to be. And let's see where it goes.
Yeah. No, I get that. I think that's a good analogy. I think it's a little bit like on Appetite for Destruction, the song I Think About You.
There you go.
Think About You, technically. You know, it's a good, solid song, but it is right there in the midst of all-time classics.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed the episode for what it was, and I think it's only going to become, better as the story goes on and we see all the ways that it is maybe more significant than we at first see it. But man, if you set that aside and just watch it for what it is, there's so much that's fun and interesting about it. So there was not anything that I disliked or questioned other than my own Deveronian horn confusion, which was quickly taken care of. Do you have hopes for the next episode?
Crosshair. Pedal to the metal, it chases them. I want that happen. I want this to go home real strong and real big and epic, and I want that too. I wanted it for this week. I didn't necessarily get it, and I'm still thinking that's going to happen, and we'll see where it goes.
Yeah. I think for me, I accidentally saw the episode title. I know that they have been released or leaked. I accidentally saw it on Wikipedia. I choose not to look. I'm not going to say it in case any listeners choose not to look. I think the pedal to the metal of which we've been speaking, I think will be coming next week.
Yeah.
Based on the title. I also just thought this is kind of a canon thing. When Sid says, Ord Mantell is at this junction of all these different routes, and, my shop is a really good place for these kinds of transactions. That also did make me think on the sort of the bounty hunter side of it. Did this adventure expose, Bad Batch and Omega in particular location a little bit more to bounty hunters?
It's got to make, I had this thought at the end when they do go back for those drinks, right? And they have that, like, they're just kind of walking in after all that. I'm like, who else is there? Now I'm feeling the need to be a little more careful even in Mantell Mixtown. So I'm right there with you on that.
And I hadn't really thought about, I don't know what sort of a police or mortician services there are on Ord Mantell, but that fun ending, we're like, yay, Sid's gonna buy us a drink amidst the corpses. That place is full of bodies right now. I think Bolo and Ketch are going to be doing some heavy lifting. Yeah. Put it that way,
they're gonna go to feed them to the pigs. There you go. Yeah.
Maybe that that will be next episode is just Bolo and Ketch having a weird gravedigger adventure.
feeding them to puffer pigs. A little Deadwood crossover here.
Yes, absolutely. That would be great. And I want space elsewhere engine there too. saying all the filthy Star Wars words. Criff and Carabast. All right. I'm also for next week's episode. I continue Hondo watch.
Yes.
I think that Hondo does totally fit into this world. Like, there's no way that Hondo does not personally know Sid, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So I think we're going to get Hondo's take on the Empire sooner or later. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you wanted to touch on, Ken?
I really dug the designs of Roland's henchmen. I thought they were kind of cool. Had kind of a bounty hunter-ish henchman vibe.
Yeah, they were a great combination of, you know, the designs we've seen, everything from like Republic Guards, Mandalorian Guards to bounty hunters. That's a great new kind of spin on some just cool Star Wars armor. So I really like that. I've already talked about the thing that I was going to talk about here, which was how much I really enjoyed the music this episode. I thought it was really great and really set you up to tell you what emotionally this episode was about. So great job on the music. As always, then, we're going to close out with a fun question. Ken, if you could have a figure or toy inspired by this episode, who or what would you want?
It needs to be a plush Ruby with some Mantel mix, like some plush Mantel mix, like a little display.
Yeah.
I think you need that. I mean, come on. When Ruby rolls over and they scratch your tummy, and then come on.
Yeah, I would love that. I am often on about my cinema scenes, the three action figures set up in a little display in the box. And I would really like a cinema scene of Bolo and Ketch playing cards on Gonky.
Yes.
Get action figures of them all. But really, like, this is never going to happen. But, you know, if Hasbro wants to do a big HasLab for a mining shaft playset, you know, in the cars have a little button where you can hit it and it throws your guard action figures out.
Yes.
It could come with a little light bomb that's got a little battery in it and a little flashlight that goes, pew, go with your early action figures.
Batteries not included. You totally see an 80s commercial for that. Crash in action, clunk. Yay!
Slam the brakes, Hunter. Will do. Oh man, now I wish I had time to just make 80s action figure commercials for modern action figures. It would be so much fun.
Yeah.
Anyway, great episode, great discussion this week. I know we need to get moving because you've got some comedy to do in Seattle, which seems like a great way to transition into telling people where they can find us.
Absolutely. I'm going to be doing a lot of Ruby humor on stage tonight or tomorrow night. So you can find us here first at Force Center. Some of you might be listening who are not regular listeners because of the Bad Batch reviews. You can find us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram, YouTube as well. We have a Facebook page, Force Center Podcast. You can get an audio book on us by going to audibletrial.com/Force Center. You can get merch at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. And then we're available in a lot of different spots. Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, of course. I know they went through a refresh everyone's a little grumpy about, so try listening on Amazon Music or other places as well. You can support us directly at patreon.com/Force Center. Again, for my adventures around this galaxy, you can go to at Ken Napsok or KenNapsok.com. There is still time. If you're listening kind of Friday or Saturday afternoon and you're in the Seattle area, head on out to Elcor Zone Theater and get some tickets to see me, Mark Ellis, Star Wars fan extraordinaire, and our pal Daniel Bridge Gad doing some stand-up comedy up in Seattle.
Yeah, go check that out. It'll be tons of fun. For myself, you can find me Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. I'm having a lot of fun sharing my action figures on TikTok. My handle on all those social media places is at Joseph Scrimshaw. And you can go to my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for all my other comedy adventures, comedy albums, my other podcast, Obsessed, links to the television show I've worked on, all sorts of great fun stuff on josephscrimshaw.com. But for now, for myself, for Ken, and of course for Ruby, this has been Bad Batch Report.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock, because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, parental controls, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.